Welcome to Shir 41, and we will now take a look at the applicability of the halachos of Shemitah in our time. Now, I've given some thought as to if we should continue to discuss Shemitah, as the topic is very detailed, and we have already covered some of the very basics, but as the observance of Shemitah today has become a major issue, and the Heter Mechira a point of contention, so it seems that it would be a good idea to examine these issues. So as we mentioned, Shemitah is one of the mitzvos hatluyos ba'aretz. However, this is complicated by the fact that there is a connection between Shemitah and Yovel. The Yerushalmi says that even those who say that Meiser today is biblical all agree that Shemitah today is rabbinic. This halach is learned from Devarim 15:2, that when Yovel applies on a D'oraisa level, Shemitah does as well, but when Yovel is not biblical, Shemitah is also rabbinic. This halacha of Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi is recorded in the Yerushalmi without any contradiction. Now, the Bavli records this statement, but with the dissenting opinion of the Chachamim, Shemitah applies on a biblical level, and this is independent of Yovel. We discussed how Yovel is one of the mitzvos hatluyos ba'aretz, and as such, like all of these mitzvos, such as Truma, Meiser, and Challah, so it, or they, only apply when all of Yisrael is in the land, and this is called Bias Kulechem. By Yovel, this is taken a step further, as the Torah states, L'chol Yosheveha, to all of its inhabitants. So to properly understand the machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi and the Rabbanon, we need to realize that the condition that all of Yisrael being in the land was not always fulfilled. For example, during the first Beis HaMikdash in the year 721 BCE, Tiglath-Pileser exiled three of the tribes. This was Reuven, Gad, and half of Menasseh, or two and a half tribes. So already from this period, Yovel was no longer on a biblical level. In the times of the second Beis HaMikdash, most of the Jewish population remained in Bavel, and therefore Yovel was rabbinic throughout the entire Second Temple era. However, there are Rishonim that disagree with this, and they cite the fact that Yirmiyahu brought back parts of each of the 10 tribes, and therefore this would meet the Torah requirement of everyone, meaning parts of all the Jewish people being in Eretz Yisrael, and therefore Yovel was on a biblical level during the second Beis HaMikdash period, according to this way of understanding. Now, based on these time periods when Yovel was rabbinic, we need to determine if the halacha followed Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi or the Chachamim regarding Shemitah. Rambam's position is not so clear, but the Kesef Mishnah understands Rambam's position to be that Shemitah today is biblical. Ramban states that the halacha follows the Rabbanon, and therefore Shemitah today is biblical. However, in a different location, Ramban implies the halacha follows Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, which would mean that Shemitah today is actually on a rabbinic level. So far, we have two opinions that seemingly, with some question, understand Shemitah to be on a biblical level. However, many of the Rishonim are of the opinion that the halacha is in accordance with Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, and therefore Shemitah today is rabbinic. And some of these include the Ritva, the Rashba, Smag, the Smak, Yerayim, Chinuch, and Tur. Most Achronim follow the majority here that Shemitah is actually rabbinic today. However, there is a minority view among the Achronim that Shemitah today is biblical, and these include such luminaries as Shagas Aryeh, the Netziv, the Ridvaz, Rav Hirsch, and the Aruch HaShulchan. Now, the Raza, he was a Rishon, author of Sefer HaMaor, has a third opinion that Shemitah today is not even rabbinic, but it's actually just a Midos Chasidus, a pious custom. And even though other Rishonim, such as the Meiri and the Rashbam, might agree to this, this opinion is considered a Das Yachid and is generally not followed. So to summarize, we have three opinions as to the status of Shemitah today. We have one which says it's biblical, two says it's rabbinic, and three says it's a Midos Chasidus. So the second opinion, that Shemitah is rabbinic, is upheld by the majority of present-day poskim. So now we're going to take a look at Shemitah in Jewish history. Rabbi Hertz writes that Shemitah and Yovel represent a rare and striking introduction of morals into economics. And while this is true, Shemitah really does more than this, as it also adds metaphysics into Jewish society. Everything about the Jewish people, our origin and continued existence, are all supernatural. Isaac Breuer writes that Yisrael's history is a meta-history, and the same applies to our land. Our land has a supernatural quality about it, and the Torah testifies to this. All nations exist if they are in their respective countries, and their legal systems grow from their national life on their national soil. However, as soon as the country ceases to exist, the nation also ceases to exist. We, however, are different. The B'nai Yisrael became a nation long before we acquired our land. Our common country, so to say, is the Torah. The purpose of our land is to fulfill the Torah, and for most of our existence, we are a historical miracle in that we continue to exist, scattered among all the nations, as a nation, even though we lost our land. To quote Rashi Yagon, we are only a nation through Torah. Now, one should not misunderstand what we are saying. The land is fully connected to Yisrael, and the Torah is ideally meant to be kept in the land. Outside of Eretz Yisrael, we could only keep a small portion of the mitzvos. The land is also completely connected to the end of days, the period of Mashiach, and this is discussed throughout Tanakh. Now, it may be difficult for us to understand or accept that the land is directly connected to the metaphysical, and the Torah itself understands this and asks the following question. And if you say, what will we eat in the seventh year? We're not allowed to farm. For a natural land, this is an absolutely legitimate question. However, the land is not natural. And the Torah answers, I will command my blessing upon you in the sixth year, and it will bring forth enough produce for 3 years. However, the Chazon Ish points out to us that not every generation or every individual farmer is worthy of this blessing. And furthermore, we must do every legal thing in our power to overcome the difficulties of Shemitah. We need to do our best without reliance on the bracha. However, we fundamentally need to be guided by the promise of supernatural intervention in connection with the agricultural and economic problems of Eretz Yisrael during Shemitah. This is not relying on a miracle, which is not permitted. This is relying on a promise that the Torah gives us. Conversely, if Shemitah is not kept, we are told in Vayikra 26 that we will lose our rights to the land. When we are in Galus, the land receives reparation for the Shemitah years that have not been observed. So this teaches us, it shows us, that when we are doing what we are supposed to do, the land reaches productive perfection, and during exile, the land sinks to levels that are well under ordinary productiveness. Just like the abundance is from the hand of God, so too is the land's desolation. And on the opposite end, neglect of Shemitah causes us to lose the land. Chazal say, based on Shmos 23:2, that since you did not let the land go, the land lets you go. And this is explained by Avos to Rabbi Nassan. The Mishnah in Avos says that we are thrown out of the land for Avodah Zarah, Gilui Arayos, Shvichas Damim, as well as for neglecting Shemitah. And the Mishnah also says that by not keeping Shemitah, pestilence increases in the world. We know that Shemitah was kept under Ezra, during Alexander the Great and Julius Caesar, during the Roman historian Cornelius Tacitus, and during the time period of the Maccabim. Josephus writes that Yovel was sanctified during one of the Maccabean kings. Keeping Shemitah to us has always meant a guarantee of God's providential care and the fact that we will eventually return to the land. The Gaon Men Rishon spend a lot of time discussing Shemitah. Ramban reports that Shemitah was kept when he was in Eretz Yisrael. The Shla, who is of the opinion that Shemitah is of a biblical nature, complains that many people, due to poverty, neglected to keep Shemitah during his time. He writes that he would rather sell the clothing that he's wearing than break the laws of Shemitah, and he attempted to strengthen the people to keep the mitzvah. He stated that keeping Shemitah would hasten the redemption. Around this time period, there was also machlokas between Rav Yosef Karo, the author of the Shulchan Aruch, and Rav Moshe ben Yosef Ditrani, the Mabit. During their time period, and for much of Jewish history, much of the land was owned by non-Jews. The Jewish population often relied on Arab settlers to get agricultural products. And the question is, What is the status of products from soil owned by a non-Jew? Does it or does it not have Kedushas Shavias? Rav Yosef Karo is of the opinion that there is no Shemitah sanctity on these products, and therefore Jews may eat from it. The Mabit and his son the Maharit, Rav Yosef ben Moshe, argue and say that these products are usher to consume and have Kedushas Shavias. Now, this Machlokas will come up again for us when we discuss the Heter Mechira, but just to briefly mention what that is, the Heter Mechira allows farmers to sell their farms before Shemitah arrives on a temporary basis in order to avoid the economic problems associated with Shemitah. Now, this is a very controversial subject, and we're going to attempt to delve into it, at least to some level, as we continue to discuss Shemitah. But we clearly see how the Heter must follow the opinion of Rav Yosef Karo and not that of the Mabit or the Maharid. So at this point, we are going to conclude Shir 41, Shemitah in our time, and we will continue in our next Shir with Shemitah in the 19th century and the controversy of the Heter Mechira.